Welcome, everyone. Today, I'm going to be talking to a nine-figure, you heard about that, a nine-figure exit brand. And I'm sure many of you would be attracted to a nine-figure exit. So today, I'm joined by Preston Rutherford. He was one of the four co-founders of Chubbies. This will be a really great episode, especially if you guys are in apparel. But also, if you guys have that goal of one day getting acquired, exiting, what the proper things are to focus on. Preston is a wealth of knowledge that he's going to lay into you as far as and give us as far as contribution dollars, contribution margin, the difference between those, how him focusing on revenue and ROAS, them almost going out of business several times because of looking at the wrong metrics. Off the backs of our forecasting series, I think this is a really, really great episode. It was one of my favorites in a long time to just interview, listen, learn, and inquire around how he built such an amazing business at Chubbies. So without further ado, let's jump in.
Today's Power Minute is brought to you by Social Snowball, an affiliate platform for e-com that is focused on enabling affiliate partnerships for what I like to call the modern affiliate. So not the traditional affiliates, publishers, blogs, etc. This is the modern affiliates such as creators, ambassadors, influencers, customers, etc. So there's many things I love about Social Snowball. One of the first things that comes to mind is they eliminate all code leaks. So if your codes that have gone out to influencers or affiliates have ended up on coupon sites, Social Snowball would eliminate this. Also, it's very important to have a tiered-based system to motivate your affiliates to continue to post and generate revenue for you. So they make that super seamless. Make it super easy on the affiliate to get paid out any which way that they like. So Venmo, PayPal, directly to their bank on a Visa gift card, Amazon gift card, all that, etc. If you guys haven't checked them out, they're on the Shopify App Store. Go check them out today. You're missing out. They are clearly the best and our number one recommendation for affiliate marketing.
All right, guys, back with another episode of the Influencer Marketing Blueprint. I am in the solo driver's seat, no co-partner, co-CEO, just me and my guest, Preston Rutherford. Thank you for joining, my man.
Yeah, I'm pumped to be here, Cody. This will be awesome. And I'm a big fan of your podcast, so I'm happy to be here.
Well, why don't you give the listeners a little bit, just a high-level overview of who you are before I brag about you.
Sure. Preston Rutherford, one of the four co-founders of a men's lifestyle apparel brand built for the weekend called Chubbies, Chubby Shorts. And it's focused on sort of like all things marketing, growth, brand, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we started the business in late 2011. Business was acquired in late 2021. Went public shortly thereafter as part of a roll-up called Solo Brands. Ticker on New York Stock Exchange is DTC, which is kind of fun. And, you know, just a lover and student of marketing, brand building, and just consumer brands in general. So I'm pumped to have the opportunity to chat today, and hopefully it's helpful, useful to the folks who decided to allocate their time to this.
I'm sure it will be. And what are you up to now? Are you still involved in Solo Brands and Chubbies? And like,
no, I'm not. I'm a happy fan cheering the team on from the outside. Happy shareholder in the public company. And in the early stages of starting something new, which is too early to even sort of talk about, but that's taking up 150% of my time.
Got it. Okay, cool. Well, I've been hawking your LinkedIn activity because you've been very active on there and just putting out a lot of great content. So real quick for everybody listening, just go follow Preston on LinkedIn. He's putting out a ton of content. Define brand.
Sure, let's do it. All right, jumping right in. So the way I would define it, like the TLDR, is it is the revenue you have when you turn off all of your marketing, all your new product launches, all your discounts. And that is the financial definition, in my opinion, of brand. And the way I'm coming at it is simply that the way we viewed brand building Chubbies was that it was kind of like BS, you know? It's like, hey, do you want to light money on fire? Okay, do brand marketing.
Right.
And, you know, we came from a performance marketing, data-driven accountability DNA. That's how we built the business from day one. But, you know, the problem we ran into is we became over-reliant on this bottom funnel demand harvesting, super measurable, as measured on whatever your short-term click-based attribution window is. And that kind of like led to us almost going out of business. So my goal in most all of my LinkedIn, you know, musings or whatever is to try to demystify, de-hand-wave-ify, and try to turn brand building into being no different from a measurement perspective, as you know, bottom funnel performance marketing or highly accountable influencer marketing, et cetera, because all it is that measure of revenue. And all that means is that more people buy from you by coming to your website, by entering your URL in their browser, or by Googling your brand name and then not having to click on a sponsored link, but coming directly to your site in that fashion. The only way you do that is by changing people's minds, but in regards to how they think about you, so that when they are in market, and one of the most mind-boggling things that I ever learned is that 95% of the people seeing your ads on any given day are simply not in market. You cannot convince them to buy from you.
Yeah, yeah.
So the 95% of folks, when they do decide that they are in market for, you know, Tiny Men shorts, for instance, they don't go through this highly rational, objective, pro-con, comparing product features of this brand, blah, blah, blah. They're just like, shorts, Chubbies, boom. I go to the site, I buy. And that's where profits come from. And when we figured all that stuff out, which we had no idea about for the first 5-6 years of the business, that's when we became a business that started to be able to grow profits, top line, both at the same time. And that's sort of like the thing that got us to some kind of an acquisition. Whereas before that, we were growing revenue a bunch, but not worth acquiring. So we had to not do that because we almost ran out of money a bunch.
So real quick on the four of you, what was your focus? Was it on this capital B brand? Was it more on the paid side, or do you guys kind of have
all of it? So we had four founders. One of us actually knew about clothes, Rainer. He's amazing. So we're a clothing business and only one of us knew anything about clothes. Kyle, all things finance, ops, business development, strategy, leadership, building the team, instrumenting it to be a machine. And then Tom and myself really tag teamed all things brand, marketing, paid, organic, content, everything.
Cool. So I love what you said. I mean, I'm taking word for word what you are talking about in terms of brand. So our brands are quantified by the revenue we have when we turn ads, discounts, and promotions off, aka our resilient base of revenue. I love how you put that. And having a machine that can effectively and predictably drive both short-term and our resilient base of revenue, that total revenue coming from that resilient base was constantly and consistently going up over time, which when I read that, all I think about is when we do forecasts, we're breaking up our returning customer revenue into two different kind of cohorts where you have your past 180-day customers and then you have your people that are active, non-recent. So they're acquired before the 180 window, but that have purchased in that past period. That's what I think of when you're talking about a resilient base of revenue. It's just you have a returning strong cohort of people that even if you turned off ads, they're going to come back and buy the product.
Yeah. The one nuance is that I'm really focused on the new customer side. So view everything that you just read from my writing purely through the lens of new customer. Yeah, on the repeat side, all of that stuff will and should happen. And that then becomes, I think, much more of a, did you deliver on the product promise? And did you feel great experiencing the product? But all that baloney about resilient baseline of revenue, growing that more so than you're growing the paid side, just think about that from the perspective purely on new customer, where you've had this impact on so many people to where they are not going to buy from you only if you put a super convincing rational appeal with product offer urgency in front of them. They're buying because they've already decided. And then once they're like, okay, I need tiny shorts, they're just going to us. So yeah, the nuance is this is, it's not purely as it relates to new customer acquisition, because obviously LTV matters. Obviously, as calculated in contribution dollars, which is important. Obviously all that matters, but what I really am trying to tell the story of, because that was the huge shift in Chubbies, to go from sort of like zero to hero, which is just like a horrible way to talk about it, but that's just what came into my mind, was we were very, as it relates to new customer acquisition, like the percentage coming from paid was just inching up and up and up and up over time, but we just weren't tracking it. But we felt like we were the best. Like we felt like, I mean, Twitter wasn't a big thing and we weren't tweeters, but you see the screenshots that people tweet about the ROAS and blah, blah, blah. Like that was, we would have done that had that been something that we did. But the big thing that we learned is that like winning that game was in no way connected to winning the real game of building a profitable business. Like ROAS would go up and we'd lose more money and we'd be like, why is this happening? And sometimes we'd make money. So there would just be no connection between this vanity metric and fundamental business results. So when you focus just on the new customer acquisition piece and doing like maniacally focusing on it, deconstructing it and figuring out how to just simply get more people to buy from you as a result of them thinking about you and then coming organically or directly to your site, that was the big nuance. And that's what creates that resilient base of new customer revenue. And then you've got another layer that is that resilient base of repeat.
I love it.
But yeah, so that's the slight nuance.
Why do you think brand is so controversial?
Because it's so easy to do it badly and really waste money. And because there's, number one. Number two, because the brand association we have with brand building and brand marketing is that it's a Super Bowl ad, right?
Yeah.
And
loosey-goosey.
That it's $6 million to buy the spot, another two to build the to generate the creative. You get one shot on goal from a creative perspective, and it either delivers or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, you're screwed. Like that's just fundamentally, that's what it had been, you know, in the past. There's that quote, like, I know I'm wasting 50% of my marketing dollars. I just don't know which 50%, right? So that's that association that I had, you know? And then I think the second piece is just like the really amazing way that Facebook and Google have positioned the data that they're delivering to you as capital T truth. You talk about capital B brand, capital T truth. This data I'm showing you is, you're going to build your business around it. This is all that is true, even though you know that if you add up what Google's giving you and Facebook's giving you, it's greater than your total revenue oftentimes, but you're like, that is true. So anything that is not this, anything that doesn't happen within my click-based attribution window is not real. So I think it's all of those things that, and I'm only taking this from the perspective of the specific things that I believed for a very long period of time.
For sure, for sure.
Today's Power Minute is brought to you by Mighty Scout, an influencer tracking tool. So you've probably heard Taylor and I talk about Mighty Scout at length in past episodes, but today we want to take special time to speak to it specifically. So if you are investing in any sort of influencer marketing to a degree, I highly suggest getting on Mighty Scout. First of all, it's going to track all of your organic posting that goes out. So if you're doing seeding, pay for posts, you can drop in all your influencers by campaign. And then once those influencers are in those campaigns, they're going to immediately start being tracked if and when they mention you by handle or any hashtags that you give it. So it's going to give and pull all that content, most importantly, so that you can know who posted, you can reach out for content rights, etc. Also, it's going to give you all the reporting and ROI on those things as far as metrics wise. So you're going to be able to know the vanity metrics that go out around those influencer posts. You're going to know everything that it goes into around influencer marketing in regards to Mighty Scout. So if you haven't checked them out, highly, highly suggest them. Go to mightyscout.com to find out more.
I wanted to talk to you about you're saying adding brand into direct response. And you were doing this in a very, it seemed like from your posts, a unique way with, we got 90-day conversion values of the non-purchase direct responses engagements on the actual ad units, aka the 90-day brand ROAS quotes. Can you break that down a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So when it can be, to your point on the controversial nature of quote unquote brand.
Yeah.
It can be scary to start to make that transition. Like how do you actually, when you're running a business and you've got fixed capital resources and you need to use cash to buy inventory, you need to use cash to drive today's business, you know, how do you actually make those first investments? And the way we did it was change the absolute smallest thing possible. Don't go from being like a heavy direct response marketer, optimizing all of your static creative and being really good at that, measuring everything, getting the toggles, blah, 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 to just becoming this organization that only creates like long form, emotionally driven video, right? That's a recipe for disaster. So like there was that. But the other piece is we were scared. We didn't want to waste money. Like data mattered. So we were like, okay, we do this DR stuff. We've got our conversion ad sets. We've got a flow in place. And this was kind of around like when Facebook Analytics came out, which was only out for a short period of time, right?
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
Gave you an interest, a much more interesting connection, you know, kind of like between your audience and conversion behavior. And it was like, wow,
yeah,
you know, you can make some of these connections. There's something there. And use some of that to just sort of like think about, okay, how can we actually, because this is all about, all marketing is direct response, in my opinion, right? And it's just different responses. So then in the same way you value the response that is a purchase, you should be able to value every other response because you can use digital quantifiable behaviors as a proxy for real life. Like just because so much of digital stuff is happening, so much of life is happening in the digital realm. So that being the driving assumption that you may or may not agree with, but we do, the thinking was, okay, well, let's just in this, yes, a purchase is like 100% probability of driving that purchase and you know the revenue, you know the contribution, you can pass back either one of those to Facebook and it'll optimize on that. But there's also these other things that Facebook isn't understanding or valuing, but we understand them for our business. We should be able to value them if we look back and do whatever historical, statistical, econometric analysis on you drive a lot of these behaviors and then this is sort of like what happens and you find those interesting relationships. So that's effectively like tactically what was done, but it's as simple as, and I'm going to use wrong numbers, but like a like is worth a buck, a comment's worth $2, a share is worth $4, or whatever, a follow is worth $8. And you just look at the engagements that ad unit drove, multiply number of engagements by conversion value, and you kind of get a different return on the same spend. And it allows you to do things like run the piece of organic content that you thought was cool, that has more of a brand first feeling to it. But then when you drop it into your conversion ad set, it 99 times out of 100 will not drive a higher ROAS or whatever your metric is. The Facebook algo will not prioritize it because it's not optimizing on whatever your objective is. But you know there's something there. You know it's doing something for your brand. Like, you know it's telling the story. So you're just like, ugh, but I don't know how much, how to value it. So anyways, the idea was just that when you put these two things together, like what Facebook is telling you plus what these values that we were kind of able to quantify after doing like a bunch of historical analysis. This was only once we had like data science people, modern data stack, data engineers, you know, built out. Maybe Matt overinvested, at least at the time, there was a wonder. Maybe we've like massively overinvested in the data side. Now looking back, we're like, wow, that was one of the best investments we made because this is really hard, but really important. But it allowed us to run our paid media in such a way where all we were doing was making a leap of, we're already valuing responses. So that's cool. So then the CFO is like, okay, then all you're doing is valuing something else that is kind of like on the way to a purchase. So like, okay, I can wrap my head around that.
Right.
The great thing though, is that generally manifests in terms of revenue, hearkening back to that resilient base of revenue. Generally, when people then, you've changed people's minds, that revenue that will manifest over the next 30, 60, 90, 180 days should come through owned and organic traffic sources because someone thinks of you, they've made the decision, they buy from you. So from a contribution perspective, it's just far more profitable and advantageous to the business. So there's sort of like, when you then kill the ad that had the higher short-term ROAS but wasn't driving these brand responses, and you do that over and over and over, you start running the more brand-first creative, yeah, ROAS will go down, but that resilient base of revenue should grow over time. And then the cash that you're just like dropping through the P&L really starts to change and really starts to look nicer. And when your Facebook ads for, let's say, your credit card payment didn't go through and deliverability is down for a couple of days, you don't have revenue drop through the floor because you've got this resilient base. You've got so many people out there that are like, okay, when it's time for me to get shorts, I'm coming to Chubby's. I don't have to see that ad in order to convert. So all these wonderful things happen when you start doing that stuff.
I want to go back to what you were mentioning earlier. You made a quick comment about, you know, you guys almost ran out of cash several times, focusing so much on the vanity metrics of ROAS and revenue. And until you switch and you even put more content about this too, until you start really focusing on first order contribution margin. And contribution margin has been like a hot term on Twitter, even though it's like been a finance term for forever.
As long as business has been business.
Yeah, exactly. It's like nobody invented this term. It's not like a hot ticket item. But it is great that everybody is focusing on this. And even how we run campaigns, we're optimizing our ads on first order CM. Talk to me a little bit about that. Like, what was that revelation? Was it just simply like the fact that like, hey guys, like we're looking at cash in the bank and we're losing money, you know, month over month, or, and how do we get to this? Or was it the thinking, okay, we want to sell this business in 3 to 5 years, and you start talking to firms and they like, hey guys, your CM needs to go way up, or you need to start optimizing this. What was that thought process? How did you guys arrive at that?
Yeah. Couple of things. Great question. So first was, it's not like contribution wasn't a thing that was looked at. Like I look at Kyle and Dave and the rest of our finance and accounting team. Like they were also very smart people. So I don't mean to imply that it's like, oh, they didn't even know what this was, but because they did, and they're way smarter than I am. But it was the process that we had that was broken as it relates to how this information on contribution was getting back to us on the marketing side. You do your monthly financial close, then so it takes time. So let's say December 31st, end of month, you then do financial close, however long that takes. Then you get data for December, let's say January 14th, I don't know. And that's when we would find out about last month's contribution. And then we'd be like, and this happened so many times, we'd be like, what the heck? This wasn't what I thought happened. Why? And then, so there's that. Like, that's fundamentally a problem. And we were like, okay, that has to be solved. So let's identify the issue, 5 whys or whatever. Okay, because we're finding out so late. But then it's sort of like, okay, well, then why the heck was this happening in the first place? And there are all these things that we then realized were... would show up in revenue as wins, but then would show up in contribution as losses. So, you know, things like lower margin product that we're launching that we just didn't know about, right? Because, you know, maybe we had to air the product over. And so therefore, you know,
your
pushing it probably doesn't
way make, higher.
Yeah. Or we're scared to charge the price that we originally wanted to charge back when we planned out the product and marketing calendar 6-7 months ago, but now we kind of feel like there's some tepid demand. So I don't think we can come out with a product that's $15 higher than our first price. So we drop the price again, product margins down, or we launched jackets. Like we're shorts people, tiny, tiny bags, tiny packages. We do fluffy jackets. We do fluffy jackets. We need to get new boxes. We go up to a new shipping cost tier that is completely not linearly scaling to AOV. And we're shipping these things out. And we're just like, what? The P&L on these orders. And we weren't even looking at everything on a per order basis that deeply. And certainly that information wasn't getting back to the marketing team. So all of these things were just like, oh, okay, that's not captured in revenue at all. We have to include all these variable costs to have any insight into how our marketing team can actually help drive profits, with the assumption being we're holding fixed costs relatively constant, right? So it was that. It was those pain points. It was realizing that we completely were out of loop on those pain points because we weren't getting the dailies. So then it was this evolution of getting to daily contribution, starting with getting to daily, super manual, peanut butter spreading assumptions on costs, right? To having an ERP that then allowed like dynamic SKU pricing, making sure that every new SKU that we were selling had costs in there, because we would miss costs sometimes and we'd launch a brand new SKU because whatever, our process broke. And then we would be thinking that contribution was through the roof, but it's because that product didn't have costs associated with it. And so all these mistakes, mostly operational and learnings, but you know, once you got there, our whole and are looking at it daily, and that then becomes the definition of success, your whole team can start to make decisions without Tom and I having to do it or whatever, optimizing for the right things. Think having that nuance, right? And that's so important, because contribution dollars and contribution margin, if you're viewing those together, and I'll maybe make one final point on like, if you just look at contribution margin, some problems that can happen there. But looking at those two things together, like you increase both of those, or you increase one holding one constant, that necessarily means your business is getting better. Whereas you increase revenue, there's no chance in hell that we know whether our fundamental business is getting better. And that's the problem. And that's what a vanity metric is. And that's what a metric that matters is. And then my final point, just on looking at the dollar generation and the margin, you know, it's just the obvious thing of like, you can game things to make a metric look good in the short term at the expense of the long-term health of your business. So that was something we did, you know, that was something we were like, contribution margin matters. Okay, so let's just turn a bunch of stuff off to get to that contribution margin number. And then you shot yourself in the foot, because then, you know, your cohorts, your next 3, 4, 5 cohorts are super tiny. And you're then having to sort of like that. So the whole idea is like, look at the dollars that you're generating and the margin at which you're generating them, right? Because it's an effectiveness measure and an efficiency measure. You can't look at one without the other.
Right.
So that's the balance. And that's one of the things that I want to make sure I mention, because we don't want to be gaming metrics, even if they're like a metric that matters, because that's then where it becomes more harmful than good. Like, optimize both, but then know when the rubber meets the road and you have to choose one or the other, know which one you're going to choose to optimize and why. So just be clear on that, but don't forget one of them.
Clarity is kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you were talking about your team, which is clear on what to optimize for. Know your numbers, know your unit economics. I mean, what you're reminding me of too is pre-iOS 14, it was just so people got lost in the sauce of AOV minus CAC, and that's my revenue, baby, on Facebook ad account dashboard. And now we have to be a lot smarter as marketers, you know, 3 years after iOS. And I think a lot of people are, because they're not just taking that capital T truth of what you think the capital T truth is, whether it's GAA last click or Facebook analytics, all that stuff. So, well, we haven't even talked about influencer, which I love. It's focused on the main things to run a business. But you guys have partnered with, you know, a few people in the past. We were talking before we press record. You're talking about George Kittle, your Bay Area guy. You talked about Thomas Rhett. Yeah. So maybe just break down how those partnerships came to be. Was it a inch up, you know, kind of like seed products and work with maybe smaller tier influencers? And then we just kind of realized that, hey, here's a fit here. Talking about Facebook analytics, what did you find George Kittle fans in your Facebook analytics? You know, I used to hawk those things back in the day. But yeah, I guess just break that down as far as like how those partnerships came to be, how that affected Chubbies at large.
Yeah. I think the first thing I would say, like caveat the heck out of it, I humbly say that I look to other brands because I don't know if, at least when I was there, so I can't speak, that we totally had it figured out. And I think the main thing, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts, is that it was sort of like a half, can I say half-assed, half-hearted commitment to this. Like it was something that we'd try, maybe devote someone half-time to it for 30 days and expect results. I mean, I think it's the same thing that is what a lot of us try to do with like broad reach or brand marketing. So I think that's a regret that I have looking back, is not understanding the true importance of this as an existentially important component of the business. But, you know, you stumble forward long enough and, you know, in spite of ourselves, some cool people with big followings are organically a fan of the brand. And we find out about this stuff. Either we just see them post and they didn't tag Chubbies or whatever, but we just happen to follow them because we're fans of them. And we see them in Chubbies and we're like, holy shit, this is amazing. This is so crazy. Let's just put fuel on this fire. So mostly it's just sort of like, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut sort of thing, like just seeing it and then just trying to be like, well, let's follow this, you know, to a certain extent.
Build a relationship here.
Yeah. Build a relationship. And I think that the cool thing about our product that sometimes I was like, oh gosh, is this like limiting, is that it is so bright and so notable. Like it's a shorter silhouette, but then they're normally, at least on our swim trunks, the prints are just loud. And some of them have gotten to a place where you just like, no, that's a Chubbies print, which is amazing. So the identifiability of something like that is great. But then you also sometimes think, you're just like, I just want to be a basics brand because people buy basics all the time and the TAM of a basics brand, whatever, you know, there's just, you have these stupid thoughts, at least I do. When you know, you kind of grass is greener sort of thing. But anyways, yeah, I mean, with, and there were, you know, other athletes and other just people that we felt represented this idea of like carefree, freedom, fun, confidence that were just kind of like out there doing it. And yeah, seeding, sending stuff out, one of the coolest things, I'm a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. One of the coolest things was seeing him wear one of our shirts. And I mean, yeah, but just amazing stuff. And I think it's just one of those things that, yeah, I mean, I think to your point, it requires commitment. So I wish we would have done better there. But then I think maybe the one thing we did okay was just making sure that when we saw something, we tried to build upon that momentum. And for better or for worse, I think that worked to a certain extent. And
And Thomas, was that how it kind of came to be? Is like you saw them tagged Chubbies and,
you know, I actually don't remember if they actually tagged, or I mean with Rhett, it may have been that we were kind of like talking to his people sort of thing, maybe after we saw that he had just, cause we were, I mean, I listened to his music. I think he's a fan. A lot of us are, we're fans. So a lot of us, I think, saw it. And then we were just like, oh shit, let's just try to do something with this. Let's jump on this. And then I think we reached out to people. So yeah, I think that's sort of the thing. It was, and not that we don't do or didn't do seeding, because I can't really speak to it now. I've been out of the business for some time. But I think the operationalizing this whole thing was really tough too, right? I mean, and that's a regret, because that was the wrong way to look at it. Because the math we did was, I can put one person on media buying and look at the revenue they can drive. and on Facebook. And then I need three full-timers to handle all these DMs and relationships and picking, packing, shipping themselves. And that...
Let alone the other human on the other side. You know, it's not a Facebook ad account dashboard. It's not a Klaviyo dashboard. It's a human being that you're dealing with. So
a human being, and there's like questions and quality assurance and FAQs and all this stuff. So it's like human relationship building, which is messy and inefficient. And well, at least the way we were doing it. I can't speak to other ways, but that was just sort of like the calculus that we did that I think was just the wrong way to look at it. So, and I humbly say that. I don't think I did it perfect. We did it perfectly.
For sure. Well, what would be, as we close here, like what would be one practical, a lot of operators, a lot of head of marketers listening to this, as a lot of this conversation ended up being around capital B brand, contribution margin, really orienting around and including brand into your contribution margin goal, you know, like including brand into making it a direct response metric. Tying this all together, like what would be your one piece of advice? I know kind of an open-ended question, but like what's your one go-to like for people that are operating brands today that are trying to get to that next level?
Yeah. Well, it's the triangulation, I think, of the three things that we talked about. So capital B brand, influencer, creator, and profitability, contribution. So bring those things together. The piece of advice I would give is if you do these things right, if you do creator right, because creator is an influencer is an absolutely fantastic way to build capital B brand at scale, right? All brand is trust, right? All brand is relationship. In the same way that I think about my friend Brian when I want to go on a run, like he's my run guy. I've got my person I want to go to a concert with. I've got my person I want to watch back. Like that's
the person you want to do a podcast with, which is me.
Cody, the person I want to do a podcast with. Yeah. That same thing is exactly what manifests when all of these people with followings are talking about your product in an authentic way, in the way that it impacts them. And that builds trust at scale. It doesn't manifest in attributable sales in the traditional short-term DR. Some of it, of course, does, especially when you're using codes, blah, blah, blah. But in my opinion, the vast majority of it does not manifest in this sort of like trackable way, but it does manifest in a variety of brand responses or brand engagements that we as marketers need to figure out how to value, because the long-term ROI on this stuff, especially if there's storytelling, authenticity, and not just buy this product right now, it's 50% off, which I know we don't do, but that's just sort of like I'm being hyperbolic to make the point. The reality is the ROI there is huge. The reality is that you do more of it, you do it well, contribution margin, contribution dollars should go up, therefore profit should go up if you're holding fixed costs constant. And that is sort of like the trinity of brand building, right? Bringing all those things together in a way that where you commit to it over time and you get maniacal about not just this super minute component of ROI that was driven in whatever, one day, 7 day, blah, blah, blah. But really, the impetus is on us as brand builders to find the ways to calculate these things, get confident in these things so that we can make the correct investments in the things that actually matter, not just in the things that drive some number that you can measure that truly does not represent success in the business.
Mm. Where do people find you? I mean, I already mentioned your LinkedIn a bunch, but if people want to listen to this and like just follow up, ask deeper questions or ping you, if you're open to that.
Follow me, LinkedIn, Preston Rutherford, little shorts emoji in the middle. And I'm trying to post every day based on all of the mistakes that I made throughout Chubby's and what I learned.
I love it. Well, thanks for jumping on the show, my man.
Yeah, Cody, it was a pleasure. Thank you. It's great podcast, big fan. I'm grateful to have been here.